Laudator Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and a very warm welcome to this edition of Vatican Weekend. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick and I'll be with you for the next half hour, bringing you a musical meditation for this fourth Sunday in Advent. In a few moments, I'll be focusing in a special way on this extraordinary jubilee year dedicated to mercy. The British Consulate and Embassy to the Holy See have come up with some important guidelines offering practical support for anyone considering a pilgrimage to the Vatican. I'll also be introducing you to some of the students from the Venerable English College here in Rome who will be helping out at a church which has been designated for the English language pilgrims. But first, let's hear what Pope Francis had to say this week during his general audience in St. Peter's Square. For this, let's join Philippa Hitchin.
Reflecting on the opening of the Holy Door of Mercy, which has been taking place in churches and cathedrals around the world, as well as here in Rome this week, Pope Francis said he wanted the Jubilee to be an experience shared by all people, noting that the first door was opened in the heart of Africa during his visit to the Central African Republic. The Pope said Rome is the visible symbol of that mystery of communion between the universal and each local church. In the same way, he said mercy and forgiveness are not just nice words, but they are visible signs that faith has transformed our hearts. In our daily lives, the Pope said, we must never grow tired of loving and forgiving others, just as God loves and forgives us.
La porta indica Gesù stesso.
The Pope recalled Jesus' own words when he said, I am the door, whoever enters through me will be saved. Going through the Holy Door then is a sign of our trust in the Lord, who did not come to judge, but rather to save us. Speaking off the cuff, the Pope said, make sure that no one asks you to pay for going through that door, because you don't pay for salvation, and Jesus is for free.
La porta è Gesù. E Gesù è gratis.
Going through the Holy Door, Pope Francis continued, is a sign of our conversion of heart. And as we go through, we must also remember to keep the door of our hearts wide open. The Pope said the sacrament of confession is an important sign of the Jubilee, as through it we can experience directly God's mercy and forgiveness.
Non è facile perdonare.
Pope Francis acknowledged it's not easy to forgive. How often, he said, people say, Father, I can't forgive my neighbour, my colleague, my mother-in-law, my sister-in-law. It's not easy to forgive through our strength alone, he concluded, but if we open our hearts to welcome God's mercy for us, then we in turn are able to forgive others.
Diventiamo capaci di perdono.
I'm Philippa Hitchin.
Having listened to the words of Pope Francis there, I'd now like to take you to one of the four major basilicas in Rome, which also happens to be his cathedral. I asked the former Minister General of the Franciscan Friars of the Atonement, Father Jim Pugliese, as to why San Giovanni in Laterano is the Holy Father's Cathedral and not St. Peter's Basilica, as many believe.
St. Peter's was a pilgrimage place. It was the tomb of the martyr. And the cathedral church of the Diocese of Rome has always been St. John Lateran's. In fact, that was the residence of the popes up until really modern times, because, you know, the summer residence used to be the Quirinale, which is now the presidential residence. So the pope lived in the city of Rome as its bishop. And because of political changes, that is, with the unification of Italy, the removal of the papal states, then the pope really was restricted to this little small area, which is known as Vatican City State. Another country. Technically, St. Peter's is a very large church, but it's not even the parish church of the Vatican. We all know St. Anne's is the parish church of Vatican City. We might just say a big neighborhood church. But of course, it's the center for all pilgrimage of people here to Rome, because where Peter was martyred and where Peter was buried became a place of worship. From the early times, Constantinian times, who built the first church there and then made it larger and larger. So technically, the Pope doesn't have a cathedral in the Vatican. There's just a parish church in the Vatican. But his cathedral, since his first and foremost, the most important title, is Bishop of Rome.
Why Bishop of Rome?
So it's an ecclesiological reason, obviously, because it is a local church that was founded here in this city, first among the Jews who accepted Jesus as their Messiah. And then we know that Paul came to the city of Rome. And he worked not among the Jewish community, even though he was always Jewish, but among those were the Gentiles, the so-called pagans that would have been the Romans or the Greeks that lived here that were not of Jewish origin. And so this church is founded on these two pillars, Peter and Paul, one representing the unity of the peoples to whom the gospel is now being preached, those first to the house of Israel, and then secondly those, as Israel's mission was to all of the world, to those outside of the house of Israel. And so this became a local church, like a church in London, in New York, Chicago, Buenos Aires, wherever. And so this was the seat of its head, which would have been the Bishop of Rome. So this title is a very important ecclesiastical title because it's a sacramental title. The title of Pope is something that's added on as an honor. We know that some churches call their bishops Papa, just like we do. For example, the Coptic Church in Egypt. It just means it's the father of this church. And so the original title and the most venerated title is being the Bishop of Rome. First and foremost, it's a sacramental role that he is bishop of a local church, a particular church. It's not just any particular church. It's a church that was founded here in Rome by the two apostles, Peter and Paul, and a church which was sanctified by the lives of many martyrs, which is the reason why Rome was so important, because of the quality of its faith in the past. It was founded on the blood of the martyrs.
St. John Lateran is considered the mother and head of all churches of the city and of the world, as is written, as is inscribed over its entrance, Omnium Orbis et Orbis Ecclesiarum Mater Caput. Can you explain?
It's the mother church because from its baptistry, which was the building which is separate from the church, but where all the Christians of this local church were born eventually, is born all churches. Now, this is a little bit a tricky interpretation. And the reason I say this is because the mother church is always referred to as Jerusalem, presided over by James and not by Peter. And in fact, this is one of the ecclesial traditions that we have, that all communities descend originally from the church in Jerusalem, which has a symbolic sense because it represents the new Jerusalem, the heavenly Jerusalem, the Jerusalem that will become the seat of the glory of God. But Rome, because of the fact that it took on importance not only from the religious point of view, where there are many people who accepted the faith, especially first, as I said before, among the Jews that were here, but also among all the other people that were living here, but also because of the fact that Rome acquires a political force. It became the center of the empire. It was the center of the empire at the time of Jesus' death. And so it was a force to be reckoned with. And we know that the role of religion in politics was always very, very important throughout the course of all of history, that emperors wanted to have a unified political base, but also because of the fact that religion many times served as the glue of that political base. And so when eventually the Roman Empire, the political aspect of it, falls into disuse, it is the Bishop of Rome who acquires the power, steps into the vacuum that is created to protect the people, to provide services, to provide judgment, etc. So the Pope then, the Bishop of Rome, begins to acquire a more of a political sense as well as a religious and spiritual sense. And so from this point of view, St. John Lateran is considered then to be the mother of all churches from which all churches are born because of the fact of his communion with its bishop.
We're listening there to the former Minister General of the Franciscan Friars of the Atonement, Father Jim Pugliese. Now, the Pope's words, his homilies and teachings provide plenty of spiritual guidance for the experience of walking through holy doors. As mentioned a moment ago, the British Consulate and Embassy to the Holy See have also come up with some important guidelines offering practical support for anyone considering a pilgrimage to the Eternal City over the coming year. From a top 10 tips leaflet on how to plan your trip to a blog detailing routes and official registration procedures, the advice aims to guarantee pilgrims not only fulfilling spiritual experience, but also a very safe and happy one too. To find out more, Philippa Hitchin sat down, together with the British Consul Joyce McDougall and with Britain's Ambassador to the Holy See, Nigel Baker. Stay tuned.
Well, how much interest is there in England in the Holy Year of Mercy?
Obviously, from one point of view, it's very much a church event rather than a state event. So, as an embassy, we are not engaging the British government directly in the internal workings of the Holy Year of Mercy. At the same time, it is also first of all, a global media event. Everybody has heard about it. They are interested in being involved. Pope Francis, of course, talks a great deal about it, particularly as he has emphasized the global nature of the Year of Mercy. And secondly, of course, for ourselves here in Rome, it's also an important consular event. We're expecting many British pilgrims to come to Rome, particularly, of course, from the Catholic Diocese of England and Wales, of Scotland and of Northern Ireland, but not exclusively. I think there are many Anglicans and indeed people of other faiths who are fascinated by the concept of the Holy Year and may well want to come to Rome themselves to experience what it's all about.
It was televised live, the opening ceremony, of course, and you were there, weren't you, in person?
It was a real privilege to be there and a privilege to step through the Holy Door. I like to say that I was the first British layman to step through the Holy Door following Pope Francis and the archbishops and cardinals present. Yeah, a very special moment, actually, when you think this doesn't happen very often. And one does pause to reflect as you step through into the Basilica.
It is, of course, a very Catholic event, isn't it? I mean, what does it mean for you as an Anglican to be stepping through that door?
Well, I think that Pope Francis has emphasised throughout his pontificate that his mission, of course, is to global Catholics, but it is to people of faith, people of goodwill. He opens up even to people not of faith, and certainly for other Christians. I think the concept of mercy, of forgiveness, of reaching out to others, be it in political situations, in terms of political dialogue, be it in the way we live our daily lives, is something that is absolutely valid to all of us. And so for myself, the event and stepping through that holy door, being forced to think about what Pope Francis is talking about is really very important.
Now, you said you're expecting large numbers of people coming over from the UK as well. Do you have any ideas at the moment about the kind of numbers, groups or individuals who might be thinking of coming over already?
We don't have at the moment. It's something that we're going to keep in touch with the groups in the UK. And we've actually set up with the registration scheme. Everybody who registers from Britain will actually be given a digital copy of the card that we've published, the top 10 tips for the pilgrimage. And with that, we should be able to get numbers as well directly from the office here.
Yes, as you say, I've been looking at that list of top 10 tips for people who are planning on making this pilgrimage. Give us an idea of what visitors can find in those tips. What do you think are the most important priorities, perhaps, for people planning the journey?
Definitely the most important tip is to take care of their belongings, especially their passport. It's amazing how many people lose their passports from arriving at the airport before they've even arrived in the hotel. Unfortunately, there is a problem with pickpockets, like in any other capital city or any other large city. So we would really ask people to take care and preferably leave their passports in the hotel in a safety deposit box and take a copy with you. You don't need to carry the original. So that would be our number one tip. Our second tip would be to look at the Foreign Office advice. This year we've done a special article on the Holy Year of Mercy as well, so all the information is online. And they would really be the most important things, especially as well travel insurance, to take travel insurance and to bring a copy of their EHIC with them.
Now, this Jubilee year, of course, opened just a matter of weeks after the terror attacks in Paris. I'm wondering what kind of security concerns have been raised and what kind of assurances can you give people in this regard?
Certainly with the security, we've worked very, very closely with Civil Protection Unit. In fact, several members of staff from the Holy See and from the British Embassy have been in touch. We've been at meetings and we're very happy with the security arrangements that have been put in place in Italy itself. With regards to travel advice, we've already got generic advice there and we don't have any specific information to make us want to up that advice that's already there. It's like any major city in the world at this moment in time, you have to be careful and Rome is no exception.
Clearly this has been very much on the Foreign Office radar over the past weeks and months as you've been preparing this advice for pilgrims, for people planning on coming over. I'm curious to know what kind of initial reactions you had perhaps from your colleagues in London. This is a country we're talking about where, for example, recently cinemas refused to allow the Church of England to run a short video about the Lord's Prayer because of concerns it might offend people who don't share religious beliefs. And yet here you are planning a major package for people planning to come over to Rome for the Holy Year?
We do it with any event where we expect to see a huge number or a large number of British people together in one area, be that football, be it Expo, be it the Holy Year. We really are trying to be more proactive and to get prevention messaging out. So we've done it for Expo, we've done it now for the Holy Year, we'll be doing it in the future. We've just launched a ski campaign as well. And it's really to try to drive down the numbers of people getting into any kind of difficulty when they're here with us in Italy.
Well, we hope there won't be too many of them. I'm curious to see that on the programme for the Jubilee Year, there isn't any special event for diplomats, is there, Ambassador Baker?
And we're probably in greater need of mercy than anybody else, I would have thought. What we have done as an embassy particularly is my deputy, Stephen Downsend, has followed the route that all pilgrims would follow. On the travel advice, there'll be a link to the blog that he did with advice to travellers. And I think, as Joyce said, it's something that as a foreign office, as a government, we would be keen to support and help any British pilgrims coming through. All the information is there online. They have to register online with the Holy See. But in the same way that we support British pilgrims to the Hajj, for example, this is now very much part of our global foreign office support and advice to British travellers around the world. And our aim is that pilgrims have a wonderful spiritual pilgrimage, but also a very safe and happy one too.
And they can, at the end of it, get a certificate, can't they, to show that they have been on this pilgrimage, that they have been through the Holy Door?
They do. There is a certificate, not produced by the embassy, produced by the Holy See itself, by the relevant Vatican office. It's in Latin, and it is a personalised certificate which will remind people of their visit to Rome.
Our thanks there go to the British Consul here in Rome, Joyce McDougall, and Britain's Ambassador to the Holy See, Nigel Baker. And of course to Philippa Hitchin. Now, staying on the subject of the Jubilee of Mercy, a number of churches throughout Rome have been designated as pilgrimage centres to assist pilgrims from particular language groups. You may be wondering, which church has been designated for the English language pilgrims? Well, it's the Church of San Giovanni dei Fiorentini. The pilgrims will be assisted by free seminarians from the Venerable English College here in Rome. John Waters, who's also studying at the college, sat down with them in one of our studios in an effort to find out more. They're Michael Rian Clark of the Diocese of Plymouth, Francis Murphy of the Archdiocese of Southwark, and David Owen from the Diocese of Shrewsbury.
Michael, Francis, David, thank you very much for joining us. Michael, could you tell us a little about the Church of San Giovanni de Fiorentini?
It's a very distinctive large church at the end of the Via Giulia in Rome. It's had a role really for pilgrims for centuries because it stands at the point of departure really for those making that pilgrimage across the Tiber to St Peter's, because in fact the Ponte Sant'Angelo was the only bridge across the river in that area. So people would have been going past the facade of San Giovanni for a long, long time. So it's really a great thing that it's going to be involved so much in the Year of Mercy.
There's a tradition that there's a relic of St Mary Magdalene inside the church. Presumably you're hoping to encourage visitors to come and see the relic and maybe to venerate it and revive that tradition a little.
Absolutely. I mean, the first two have witnessed the Lord's resurrection. It's a perfect time to reflect upon that as we think about the Lord's merciful face. And also, of course, the tradition of going to greet Mary Magdalene before going to greet St Peter is also a really beautiful tradition. In fact, the chapel to Mary Magdalene that was on the other side of the Ponte Sisto was demolished when they built the Lungo Tevere, and the relic was transferred into the Church of San Giovanni at that stage. So it's a really wonderful thing that people are able to venerate that as well and to reflect on being recipients of Christ's mercy.
Francis, the church has one of the first Divine Mercy images inside it. Can you tell us a little about that, please?
I can, yes, John. Well, as many Catholics will be familiar with devotion to the Divine Mercy, the Jubilee year is an opportunity to recenter that devotion. In the Church of San Giovanni dei Fiorentini, we have one of the earliest images of the Divine Mercy as revealed to St. Faustina Kowalska, a saint whose cause was championed by John Paul II. The image is one you see in many churches of blood and water flowing from the side of our Lord. And every week in San Giovanni dei Fiorentini at 5:30 on a Friday, there are pilgrims, locals, who will gather to pray before that image and to ponder the infinite riches of God's mercy, something that Pope Francis himself has reminded us of in calling this extraordinary Jubilee year.
Wonderful. So you'll be hoping to make much more of a feature of the Divine Mercy image and encourage more devotion and more veneration in the same manner that that we're seeing in the church every week, or are you going to expand?
Well, there's
slightly?
Going to be an expanded programme of devotions before the image, and I think the other factor that needs to be brought into play is the real emphasis on the English language pilgrims being able to participate in a way that perhaps until now they haven't been able to. So we'll be looking at different ways to tap into what the Pope has given the Church to focus on. In calling this Year of Mercy, he's asked us in particular to look at mercy as the word which reveals to us the very mystery of the Holy Trinity. So we can go back to those writings of St. Faustina, to that image, with a renewed sense of the meaning of divine mercy and the various aspects to mercy in our relationship with God.
David, I understand there's a connection between the English College and Church of San Giovanni, going back quite a long way. What can you tell us about that?
Well, the connection that you speak of, John, arises from St. Philip Neri. St. Philip, as many of our listeners will know, is originally from Florence, and shortly after he moved to Rome and after his ordination to the priesthood, he actually established himself in the Church of San Girolamo della Carità, which is opposite the Venerable English College in Rome. It was shortly after he arrived at San Girolamo that the Florentine community in Rome petitioned for him to become the parish priest of San Giovanni dei Fiorentini, their own church. St. Philip, after a period of discernment, agreed to this request. However, he remained a resident of San Girolamo della Carità and established a community of five priests to represent him in San Giovanni. Those five priests at first used to returned to San Girolamo della Carità to live in community with St. Philip and to participate in various spiritual exercises. However, over time, that community started to expand and expand, becoming the congregation of the Oratory as we know it now. Eventually, they established themselves in San Giovanni dei Fiorentini prior to being given the Chiesa Nuova, the first major church of the Congregation of the Oratory. And St. Philip has a particularly strong link with our college, the Venerable English College. It's a very well-known legend that when our first martyrs, the first seminarians of our college, were passing by San Girolamo on the way to their lectures, Philip would often greet them, Salvete Flores Martyrum, Hail Flowering Martyrs. And there's the tradition as well that they would go to him for a blessing before going back to the English mission, but which for many of them resulted in their martyrdom. And so, yes, there's a very strong link. And then also the Oratorian link with Blessed John Henry Newman, that wonderful patron of the new evangelisation in England, who brought the Oratory to our shores.
Wonderful. So we're hoping to continue the tradition that's been handed on by St. Philip and the martyrs of the English College. We're taking our turn in that history and moving forward with the tradition that they've given us. Now, as far as the programme of activities for English visitors and English-speaking visitors at the Church of San Giovanni, what can you all tell us about that? What roughly is going to be on offer for those of us from the English language world who are coming to visit for the Year of Mercy?
Well, John, I'm reminded of the psalm when we're asked to seek the Lord's face. And so it's really fitting that Eucharistic adoration forms such a big part of the programme that's on offer at San Giovanni.
Will there be an opportunity for anyone to make confessions? Pope Francis has been talking about confession as one of the greatest sacraments of mercy and where we truly encounter the mercy of Jesus. And hopefully lots of English-speaking visitors will want to avail themselves of the sacrament, maybe even come back to the sacrament for the first time. Presumably there'll be an offer of confessions in the English language.
Oh, of course, yes. One of the wonderful things about our Holy Father that really sticks in my mind is when he summons us to go out and just get that smell of the sheep and be among the sheep. Because, of course, in Rome, in a church which is very much the heart of Rome, there are so many lost sheep wandering around, going into these beautiful churches, and it's a wonderful opportunity for them to be inspired in this Year of Mercy, to be with our Lord's Eucharistic presence, in adoration, and then also availing of the sacraments of penance.
And our thanks there go to Michael, Francis and David from the Venerable English College here in Rome, and of course to John Waters for interviewing them and letting us know about the Church of San Giovanni dei Fiorentini. Time now to join the rector of the Venerable English College here in Rome, this time for a musical meditation. On the fourth Sunday of Advent, Monsignor Philip Whitmore then.
And all above there lay a salt tree, on which he made a night's melody, so sweetly that all the chamber rung, and Angelus ad Virginem he sung. Geoffrey Chaucer wrote those lines in his Canterbury Tales. They come from the Miller's Tale, and they tell of a young clerk called Nicholas, who was obviously a good musician. Angelus ad Virginem was a popular medieval carol with a strong, lilting rhythm that made it suitable for singing out of doors, on processions and on pilgrimages. There's every chance that Chaucer's pilgrims would have sung it on their way to Canterbury. It tells the story of the angel Gabriel appearing to Mary and inviting her to become the Mother of God. As we approach the end of Advent, our thoughts turn more and more to Mary, who is soon to give birth to the long-awaited Saviour. Our Gospel readings on the fourth Sunday of Advent help us to focus on the child in Mary's womb. Replied to the angel, "Behold, the handmaid of the Lord. Let it be done to me according to your word." With those words, she accepted in joyful obedience the role that God had designed for her in his great plan for the salvation of the world. The mystery of the Annunciation has inspired painters and musicians for centuries. One of my favourite Advent carols tells the story using the music of an old folk melody from the Basque region. The words are by a rather eccentric Anglican priest called Sabine Baring Gould, who was rector of Lew Trenchard in Devon at the turn of the 20th century. He also wrote Onward Christian Soldiers, set to music by Sir Arthur Sullivan. That's a hymn you don't hear too often these days, but his other famous hymn, The Angel Gabriel, is still popular with English-speaking congregations the world over. It captures perfectly the mood of joyful expectation that marks these last days of Advent.
Senior Philip Whitmore is a music historian who's currently rector of the Venerable English College here in Rome. That brings me up to time. I do hope you enjoyed this broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Thanks so much for listening. Should you wish to find out more about our programming, do check out our website. The address is www.radiovaticana.org and then click on the English icon. Be sure to like our Facebook page. This is Vatican Radio. Laudetur Jesus Christus.